Welcome to the Awake Nations TV podcast. Download our apps and watch our shows at awakenations.tv.
On screen, characters are screaming at each other, and without knowing the setting of the story or, you know, the relationships or the plot that actually led up to this moment, you are going to completely misinterpret what that ending actually means.
Yeah, you're just going to project your own assumptions onto all that chaos.
Exactly. And that is exactly what millions of people are doing today when they look at the end times. Welcome to Awake Nations TV, and welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are launching a brand new series dedicated to untangling one of the most confusing, highly debated, and honestly anxiety-inducing topics in the world.
It really is. It causes so much stress for people.
It totally does. And we're going to do this by looking at a really fascinating book from Dr. Georgi Kuri. It's called The Sign of the Kingdom, The Present Reign of Christ in Light of the Olivet Discourse.
Such a great book.
It really is. So if you are a listener who has ever felt overwhelmed by the endless theories, all the complex charts, and those terrifying predictions about the future, I mean, this series is built specifically for you. Today, for this conversation, we are focusing strictly on the book's introduction, just to lay out the foundation and, you know, define our terms.
Yeah. And Kuri opens the book with this really sobering premise. He points out that the church has entered the 21st century carrying a massive amount of confusion regarding the future.
Oh, massive. I mean, you see it everywhere.
Right. People are bombarded with so many competing, anxiety-inducing predictions that, honestly, many have just thrown their hands up in frustration. They've just walked away from the topic entirely.
Which makes sense. It's overwhelming.
Completely. But Kuri's mission in this book is to cut through all of that noise.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to bypass the centuries of modern speculation and just go straight back to the original source material.
Right, because he argues we have to figure out what was actually said in the room before we try to, like, apply it to our modern world.
Exactly. The historical context is everything.
Well, so before we jump into complex theology, we need to know what text Kuri is actually analyzing, right? So the subtitle of the book mentions the Olivet Discourse. Can you define what that is for the listener and maybe set the stage of the actual physical room Jesus was in?
Sure. So the Olivet Discourse is the absolute anchor for this entire book. It is the most important and comprehensive prophetic sermon in the entire Bible.
Okay, wow. Most important.
Yeah. Without a doubt. You find it primarily in Matthew 24, as well as Mark 13 and Luke 21. And Jesus delivered this message to his core disciples on the Mount of Olives.
Hence the name Olivet.
Exactly. That's where the name comes from. And the timing here is just incredibly crucial. This happened literally just days before his crucifixion.
So the tension must have been incredibly high.
Oh, absolutely. And what makes this text so vital is that it is Jesus's own personal direct commentary on his own prophecies.
Okay, so it's not like other people guessing what he meant.
Right. He isn't speaking in vague parables here. He is looking his closest followers right in the eye and laying out the blueprint for the future.
But he is speaking to first century Jewish men, right? Living in a very specific political climate. Like, going back to that movie theater analogy, if we don't understand the tension in Jerusalem that week, we just completely miss the plot.
Oh, we miss it entirely.
Because first century Israel was under the suffocating military occupation of the Roman Empire. You had zealots wanting a violent revolution, and the general population was just expecting this conquering military messiah to ride in on a horse and smash Rome.
Yeah, they wanted a political rescue.
Right. But instead, Jesus drops a total bombshell. He tells his disciples that their magnificent temple, which was the absolute center of their religious and national identity, is going to be completely destroyed.
Yeah, and that statement shattered their entire worldview. I mean, for a first century Jew, the destruction of the temple was synonymous with the end of the world as they knew it.
The ultimate catastrophe.
Exactly. So it prompted the disciples to panic.
Yeah.
And they ask a very specific, almost frantic question, which actually becomes the central driving question of Kuri's entire book. They ask, what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?
Okay, so that's the big question.
That's it. Kuri focuses intensely on this one thing. What did Jesus actually mean by the sign? Specifically, they talk about the sign of the Son of Man in heaven.
But I feel like we run into a massive translation issue here, and not necessarily with, like, the Greek or Hebrew words, but with time.
Oh, for sure. The chronological distance.
Right. We take a phrase that was spoken to first century fishermen who were facing the literal destruction of their capital city, and we just parachute it into the 21st century.
We do it all the time.
We do. And are we misinterpreting the signs simply because we've, you know, ignored the room Jesus was standing in when he talked about it?
Yeah.
Yes. Khoury insists that modern readers constantly strip the text of its historical soil. He argues that to understand our present destiny, we actually have to look back thousands of years. We have to figure out what those specific men understood Jesus to mean in that exact moment.
Which means we really have to understand the timeline Jesus was operating on. And that brings us to, well, a pretty heavy academic word that Khoury uses constantly in the introduction.
Ah, eschatology.
Yes, eschatology. Let's unpack this word for the listener because it sounds intimidating.
It does, but it's actually pretty straightforward. It comes from the Greek word eschatos, which just means last. So eschatology is simply the study of last things, or the theology of how human history culminates.
Okay, so just the study of the end of the story.
Basically, yeah. And everyone has one. Every worldview, whether it's religious or secular, has an eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
It's a belief about where the human story is ultimately heading.
And this is where Khoury makes a highly provocative claim, right? He states that the Olivet Discourse is not just a scattered collection of prophetic hints designed to be, like, deciphered on YouTube centuries later.
Definitely not. Khoury claims that the Olivet Discourse is Jesus' own eschatology.
His own timeline.
Right. It is a highly structured divine chronology of his kingdom. Khoury is adamant that Jesus wasn't leaving his followers to just guess what was going to happen. He lays out a specific timeline authored by Christ himself.
And according to Khoury's reading of the introduction, this timeline doesn't begin in some, I don't know, distant science fiction future, right?
No. It begins in the first century. The chronology starts with Christ's resurrection. Then it moves to his ascension, his enthronement at the right hand of God, and the outpouring of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost.
Okay, so all past events for us.
Exactly. And Khoury argues that this timeline continues through history, with Jesus actively reigning and governing the nations right now, culminating eventually in his final second coming.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, but also where I need to push back a little. Because this concept of a present reign, I mean, if Jesus laid out a timeline where he is actively reigning and governing the nations right now, how does Khoury explain the absolute chaos in the world today?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question.
Right, because if I look out my window or read the news, it certainly does not look like a divine, perfect government is in charge. It looks like a huge mess.
And that is the most common pushback to this theology. But Khoury addresses the mechanics of it by pointing back to the Old Testament types and shadows. See, the modern expectation is that a reign means immediate, forced global peace. Like a switch just being flipped.
Yeah, like overnight perfection.
Right. But Khoury points out that Jesus defined his kingdom very differently. Jesus described it as a mustard seed growing slowly, or leaven working its way through a lump of dough.
Oh, so it's a gradual process.
Yes.
Yeah.
Think of it like an embassy.
Yeah.
An embassy operates in a foreign and sometimes hostile territory, right? But it carries the full authority and government of its home country.
I love that analogy.
It works so well. Khoury argues that Jesus' ascension established the central authority, and the church was meant to function as the embassy, bringing the culture and the justice of that government into a chaotic world over time.
Wow. And that brings up a really fascinating aha moment regarding how we read Old Testament prophecies, doesn't it?
It really does.
Because we tend to read phrases like the Son of Man coming on the clouds, and we immediately picture Jesus descending from the sky to, like, end the physical world.
Oh, totally. That's the default imagery.
Right. But Khoury points out that Jesus is actually directly quoting Daniel chapter 7 there. And in Daniel 7, the Son of Man is not coming down to earth.
No, he is going up.
Yes.
Daniel sees the Son of Man approaching the Ancient of Days, God the Father, to be presented before him and to receive dominion and glory and a kingdom.
So it's an upward movement.
Exactly. Khoury argues that when Jesus talked about the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, he wasn't talking about his future descent. He was talking about his first century ascension and vindication. He was telling the disciples, "The sign that I am who I say I am will be my ascension to the Father's right hand to actually receive the kingdom."
That completely inverts the timeline. I mean, it means the kingdom isn't just a physical piece of real estate in the Middle East that we are, you know, waiting to be established in the future. It is a present spiritual governing reality that began in the first century.
Right. Jesus's eschatology is the lens through which all those Old Testament hopes find their literal fulfillment.
So if Jesus laid out his own timeline so clearly, why is there so much confusion in the 21st century church?
Well, Curry diagnoses this as a repeating tragedy throughout church history. When the church fails to understand or accept Jesus's own eschatology, this timeline of a present growing kingdom, it inevitably invents its own.
Because human beings crave certainty, right? We want a clear map.
Exactly. We want a map of the future. And if we lose the original map Jesus provided, we will just build a substitute.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
Perfectly so.
You take away the original first century meaning, and people will just fill it with complex charts, speculative math, and constant anxiety. We end up with these incredibly convoluted theological systems that do nothing but cause division.
And believers spend their time arguing over timelines rather than doing anything productive. The result is immense theological strife.
Right. But let me play devil's advocate for a second. Some people might tell you that studying eschatology is highly impractical. Like, it's just an academic debate that causes arguments. Why should the listener actually care about getting this right?
That's a fair question, and Curry addresses it directly. He argues the most dangerous consequence of these invented timelines isn't just the arguments. It is the fundamental misunderstanding of the church's true mission in the present moment.
What do you mean?
Well, if the church believes the kingdom is strictly a future event that only happens after some cataclysmic rescue, it essentially abdicates its responsibility today.
Oh, I see. It's like the difference between being an ambassador and being a passenger in a waiting room.
Yes, exactly.
Like, if you are sitting in a waiting room waiting for your number to be called so you can escape, you aren't going to bother painting the walls or fixing the plumbing. You don't care about the state of the room because you're leaving.
Right, you're out of there anyway.
But if you are an ambassador tasked with establishing an embassy, well, then your daily work has massive significance.
And Curry emphasizes that the Olivet Discourse was the very foundation of the early church's faith. I mean, the original apostles based their preaching, their confidence, and even their willingness to face severe persecution entirely on what Jesus told them on that mountain.
It gave them their marching orders.
Exactly. They believed they were the instrument of a kingdom that had already been inaugurated. And we live in a world that desperately needs the government of God, the justice, the mercy, the peace of that kingdom. So studying eschatology isn't just some impractical academic exercise. It is about knowing your current purpose and identity.
Okay, so if the goal of Curry's book is to, you know, dismantle all these invented timelines and reconstruct Jesus's original meaning, we need to look at how he actually structures that argument.
Right, he does it very methodically.
Yeah, in the introduction, he provides a roadmap of the 8 chapters. And instead of just walking through them like a dry table of contents, let's group them conceptually so the listener understands the phases of this journey.
Good idea. So Curry approaches this in 3 distinct phases. The first phase is all about clearing the ground and setting the historical soil, which covers the first 4 chapters.
Right. So chapter 1 is the setting of the sign.
Right. Forcing us to look at the political and religious tension in Jerusalem that we discussed earlier. Then chapter 2 is the search for the sign, analyzing exactly why the disciples asked their question in the first place.
But the most critical part of this first phase has to be chapter 3, the spurious signs.
Oh, absolutely.
Spurious meaning fake or like false alarms. This is incredibly relevant today because before Jesus even tells them what the true sign is, he gives them a list of things that are not the sign.
Right. He talks about wars, rumors of wars, famines, and earthquakes, and explicitly says, "Do not be alarmed. The end is not yet."
Yet modern readers routinely do the exact opposite.
We really do.
They see a war in the Middle East or an earthquake on the news and immediately start doom scrolling, claiming these are the signs of the end times.
Yeah, Curry points out that Jesus was actually giving his disciples a list of historical constants to ignore so they wouldn't be distracted.
Wow, constants to ignore. That's powerful.
And after clearing away those false alarms in chapter 4, Curry looks at the stipulation for the sign, the specific requirements Jesus said had to be fulfilled before the end of their age would come.
Okay, so once that historical groundwork is laid, Curry moves into phase 2, which is really the core of the book.
Yeah, this is where he identifies the sign itself in chapter 5 and the season of the sign in chapter 6.
So defining what the sign of the Son of Man in heaven actually is, based purely on the text and the Old Testament prophets.
Exactly. And once he defines the what, he pinpoints the when. He tackles the timing of the events Jesus described, really examining whether they were thousands of years away or imminent for the generation sitting on that mountain.
Which leads to the final phase, chapters 7 and 8, the aftermath, the significance of the sign and the success of the sign.
Right, because Khoury doesn't just want to win a debate about timing. He explores what this event actually accomplished for the kingdom of God. Like, how did it permanently change the dynamic between heaven and earth?
And he concludes by showing that Jesus' timeline didn't fail or get delayed.
Right. It succeeded perfectly, inaugurating an era of spiritual victory.
So what does this all mean for us? It means we are going to strip away the centuries of speculation, the late-night doom-scrolling, and all that fear-based theology. We are reconstructing this discourse piece by piece by looking at the words Jesus actually said to the people sitting right in front of him.
And that's so important, because knowledge is most valuable when it is understood and applied. Khoury explicitly states in the introduction that his goal is not to start a theological brawl or cause more division.
We have enough of that already.
We really do. His goal is to remove confusion and restore a unified understanding of what the Lord is doing in the present day. Because when the church is fractured and arguing about the future, it just becomes completely paralyzed in the present.
Which leaves us with a massive paradigm shift to process. As we wrap up this introduction to the series, I want to leave you, the listener, with a question to mull over.
It's a big one.
It really is. If we've been sitting in the wrong movie theater, misinterpreting the explosive events on screen because we completely miss the first century context, our reactions to the modern world are going to be entirely wrong.
Completely backward.
Right. If Jesus's eschatology is actually about a kingdom that is operating right now, if his ascension already established his active reign over the nations and the church is meant to be his embassy, how does that change the way you wake up and live your life tomorrow? Are you waiting for a future rescue from a deteriorating world, or are you part of a present kingdom tasked with a mission today?
And if the kingdom is a present reality, our daily lives, our vocations, and our engagement with our communities, they're all imbued with incredible weight.
Yes.
We aren't just killing time until the end. We're participating in the unfolding of a divine government.
It just completely changes the posture of faith from passive anxiety to active, confident participation. And that is the journey we are taking in this series. Next time on The Deep Dive, we officially launch into the text with Episode 1, Chapter 1, The Setting of the Sign. You won't want to miss it. It changes the posture of faith from passive anxiety to active, confident participation. And that is the journey we are taking in this series. Next time on The Deep Dive, we officially launch into the text with Episode 1, Chapter 1, The Setting of the Sign. You won't want to miss it.